The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you. And today is, once again, very, very big day. It is the 9th of May. It's Wednesday. It's the day before we open officially the Players' Championship at the TPC Sawgrass. And everybody is excited about this. We keep saying it, not officially a major, but might as well be, because all the big boys are playing in this one. It is as competitive a field of golf as you're going to find anywhere on the planet all year long. And everybody is focused in on this. And quite honestly, they're very proud, anybody that's ever won a Players' Championship, to claim that they've won a Players' Championship. Not much different than if you've won a Masters or a U.S. Open or a British Open. So it's very, very prestigious. And that means that we've got Frank Bassett there. Because if it's a big deal, then Frank heads in that direction. And Frank is there in his old stomping grounds. I'm not sure how he gets back into the county, quite honestly. I think he's wearing a mask right now, but somehow he got there, and Frank joins us now from the Players' Championship at Sawgrass. And Frank, you got to be happy as a pig in slop right now, huh?
Do you know how much I love this place, man? Come on. Yeah. It's so good to be back and see all my old friends and make new friends. We're here at the Marriott Sawgrass. They're our host this week. What a fabulous Marriott Sawgrass Resort this place is. It's just gorgeous. Everything's perfect. Everybody's here. I mean, this is a big deal. It's the top players in the world. And we talked about what you said, Tim, about the, everybody talks about it being a major, the fifth major and this and that. And I said on the show on Monday that, it's not a major. It's not the fifth major. It is the greatest field in all of golf that competes on the grounds of Sawgrass here, the TPC Sawgrass Golf Course, Stadium Course, and it's the Players. That's what it is. It's just the Players, and I love this tournament. I love this city. Love my friends here, and I also love my good friend who's been with me on the road since you won't travel with me anymore after that incident in Poughkeepsie. Diane Knox from Secret Golf's been working with us all week, filling your shoes, man.
It's been so good.
Hey.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And it's always great to be here. I always love being able to hang out with you and to talk about golf and to do this show. And especially because this is my hometown. I live 10 minutes down the road from the course. So
she does.
We're having fun this
week. And people threw me under the bus this morning.
No, you threw yourself under the bus.
I show up at the set.
Sounds
here.
More like
we're,
it.
We're at the set right in the Marriott Sawgrass lobby. And as I'm walking up, everybody from Secret Golf looks up and says, "Oh, boy. We heard about you last night." I went, "Oh, no, 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 no." So my good buddy, Todd Lewis, comes by and says, "What do you say, Diane?"
Well, when I was walking into the Marriott this morning, Todd was walking out. And I said, "Hi, how are you?" And he said, "Great. Don't think Frank is, though. You might have to give Frank some aspirin this morning." I'm like, "Oh, gosh, was it that kind of a night last night?" So Todd Lewis threw you under the bus on the Golf Channel. It was definitely not me.
Well, I did go last night, Tim, to dinner. Mark Zucchino took me to dinner, which was nice, the crazy Canadian that he is. But Bucky Buchanan, our good friend, of course, who lives here, was buying drinks for everybody. So we're here at the Sawgrass Marriott Bar having a big time. Then we end up at Nona Blue, and Bill Bona was there, the owner. Of course, it's Graham McDowell and Bill Bona and those guys. So the party continued there, and then it came back to the Marriott Sawgrass, and then the carnage called Sunrise occurred.
And you didn't tell me that.
The carnage called Sunrise?
Oh, the carnage.
The carnage. I woke up with one sock on. Anyway, we won't go there. But, we had a good time. Everybody's just pulling each other's chain.
Very Charles Darwin of you here. I mean, you're kind of going back into the archives of when you... And you were there... Give us the years, Frank. You were there from 1937 to...
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you live there? When did you live there?
It was in the 80s. And 80s and early 90s. And it was when this Marriott was built and this golf course. I was here when this golf course... Marriott wasn't here. Marsh Landing Country Club wasn't here. Ruth Chris wasn't here. Nothing but a two-lane road on A1A, Sawgrass Country Club across the street, and the Players' Championship course. Of course, they built it, and I was here for the inaugural TPC in those days is what it was called. And Jerry Pate won it and jumped in the water hazard and threw Pete Dye and the Dean Beeman in subsequently.
Was it built in a swampy land? Wasn't it kind of like really raw, rough land that people are like, how are you going to build a golf course here or whatever you're planning on doing?
The Fletcher family donated all of this land. They maintained the development rights for the donation of the land for $1 is what the tour paid for this property. And because at the time, I had a girlfriend, we'll say, whatever. My girlfriend was Stephanie Fletcher. So I knew kind of the inside scoop, what was going on here. But they donated it for $1. And Pete Dye came in, and they moved a lot of dirt and a lot of underbrush and a lot of gators and snakes and critters. And this was a swamp. It was a true swamp.
Well, there's the intercoastal not far from here. And there is a lot of swampy land around. So the fact that we have this incredible golf course in the middle of it is outstanding.
Yeah, it's.
I can't imagine who the first person, when they told the workers, okay, we start tomorrow, you show up and your job is to go into that thicket and start clearing brush with everything like you just described coming at you, wanting to eat you.
Oh.
Yeah, I just like, no, I'll go second or third, but I'm not the first guy in.
Here, take this machete. Take this machete, John, and you just jump right in there and start clearing land.
Yeah, and start our golf course right over there. Just start a golf course. Where? Right there.
Yeah, well, anyway, subsequently, you know, it's this course facility. Oh, it's gorgeous, man. And the new clubhouse, the old clubhouse had a lot of history and loved it, but the new clubhouse is massive, and it's just... I mean, it's lovely, it's gorgeous, it's fabulous. There's no other way to describe it. It is the home of the PGA Tour, as it should be the premier event and the premier place for tour players to come.
Well, we were talking to quite a lot of our secret golfers over the past few days, and they've all said that the golf course is in the best condition they have ever seen it. Andrew Landry this morning came over, and I said, how was the course? And he went, wow.
Yeah.
He said that it is, and it's his first time playing at the Players, but he said that he played a practice round with Duffner, and Duffner said the same thing. He's never seen it look so good.
Yeah, it does. It looks beautiful. And they've made some changes this year, Tim. They've taken a lot of the stands down. Like on number one tee box, they used to have stands built up all around it. They've taken all those down, and it's back to where it was originally, where patrons could sit in the grass, and it's kind of tiered up like a hill.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more natural now. It's just they've done a fabulous job with this place. I mean, Pete Dye laid out a great layout. They've made tweaks and adjustments to it over the years. Of course, sub-air is everywhere here. And for our listeners, I'm sure all of our listeners know what sub-air is. So they can make this course any way they want to make it play. And in May, we had this conversation too, and I'd really be interested, since you're a Trinity Forest and you've seen that one come up like I saw this one come up. They're moving it back to March, as you know, next year. So this will be the last Mother's Day that the final rounds played at TPC Sawgrass. Back to March changes the dynamic totally. The weather will be a huge factor. And, it's cold, it's windy, it's hot, it's humid, it's dry. It just does everything in March here.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a totally different thing. You're all in favor of that because you think that adds to the drama of the competition that they have at the Players when the weather is a bigger factor than it is at this time of the year. So it will be interesting to see how that changes when you get there, and that'll be again next year, next spring, that they'll change it. By the way, Steve Elkington, I wanted to make sure we didn't bury him. Diane's partner in crime with Secret Golf will be joining us in a little bit too, so make sure that you stick around with us because Elk always has something to say. Whether he has something to say or not, he's got something to say.
He's actually texting me as we speak right now.
What's
so
he saying? Let's read an Elk text.
To go.
Is
he
ready?
What time am I supposed to do this again?
He's 10 minutes. He's sat by the phone right now.
He's sitting with bated breath or whatever. So, I tell you, Secret Golf, Tim, we've joined forces together with Secret Golf. Golf Talk America is the we're the audio side of it, but they have audio too and video, but we're joining our forces together, pulling all their players in. Diane's doing a lot of great interviews. We've had everybody through here, including a few minutes ago, Sandra Gall, who's a new Secret golfer.
Yep, she just signed a couple of weeks ago, Sandra Gall from the LPGA Tour. She's been on tour since 2008. Yeah. She's had like 10 years on tour now. So
she's kind of local too, isn't she? Didn't she go to school locally?
Yeah, she went to University of Florida. Yeah. She was a Gator girl, but she actually qualified for the LPGA Tour I think it was her final semester of her final year, so she didn't get to play her final semester collegiate golf, but she said, you know, of course,
don't give away the whole
if you get through Q School, you're going to play on the LPGA Tour right
but,
now.
But everybody's come through here. Andrew Landry was here a minute ago. He's a fellow Arkansan, like I am, so, you know, that was great, and Diane got to interview her own brother, Russell.
That's so weird. It's the first time I'd ever properly done that.
It was fun, though.
We've spoken on the phone before for
without smacking him in the head and
like
stuff.
Face-to-face interview and having to be professional and nice to him was good.
Yeah. And guess who's in the room next to me here in the hotel?
I don't know.
Somebody that we both know very well who couldn't play this past year at Jordan Spieth's Family Foundation event, but he and I held down a certain hole, number 17,
Barstool,
number 17. Yeah, Ryan Palmer.
Ryan's there.
Yeah, Ryan's here.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a secret golfer.
Stay quiet,
he was interviewed.
Frank. He's got to get his sleep.
I was beating on the wall last night and screaming, just trying to do everything I could do. No, I'm kidding.
Ryan plays actually tomorrow morning, local time, 7:20 is his tee time. He's going with Bud Cauley and Harold Varner, the third that they're teeing off on the number one hole at 7:21. Of course, they have split tees, so you have the guys going off the first tee, and then also guys going off the 10th tee. It gets pretty interesting. You get it at 8 o'clock. You got Bubba, Dustin Johnson, and Brooks Koepka. You talk about firepower. Holy smokes, those three guys, you better be standing 400 yards down if you want to see the ball coming at you off the tee. So those three guys are playing together. There are a few threesomes that are kind of, maybe not even a kind of, but very much star-studded, and that's the way they want it. That's the way the fans will want it, so they can watch one group for a number of holes if they want to. At 8:27, you've got Rory, Justin, and Jordan. You know you're big when you only need one name, Frank, right?
Exactly. Share.
Rory, Justin, and Jordan are all going off at the same time. And maybe the one that's going to get the most attention because of some of the comments that were made yesterday during the news conferences and had a lot of fun with it is the group of Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler, and Tiger Woods.
Tell us.
Boy,
people
are going to watch
that. Give
them.
Us your take on that, the first at you comment that was made. What?
Yeah, and so Phil and Tiger do not play an awful lot of golf together. You know, and people have made things about it in the past that they weren't really friendly. And quite honestly, they were probably the same as Jack and Tom Watson and all the guys when you're younger and competitive. It is what it is. Until this era. I mean, these guys are a bit different now with Jordan, Justin, all those guys being buddies. But back in the day, and even today, with some exception, most of those guys, you know, you're friendly, but you don't hang out with them. Their wives don't go to dinner together and all that stuff. So Phil and Tiger kind of had that history. Now that they've both cracked their 40s and been involved with Ryder Cups and President's Cup, they're a lot more friendly. So they're asking Phil about the tournament and how they're paired together. And Phil said, yeah, you know what? Everybody likes that and everybody wants to see it. And he started doing a little tongue-in-cheek. Everybody wants to see the two of us play. As a matter of fact, why don't we just cut to the chase, eliminate all the other rounds of golf, and just have he and I play at a high-stakes winner-take-all match? Like, he's throwing it out there. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, we all know Phil likes to put a few dollars on it. I think he's setting things up, Frank, quite honestly, for down the road, and don't you know, some TV producers are going to say, wouldn't that be awesome when these guys kind of get away from their competitiveness to do a skins game kind of thing again and get Phil and Tiger and have those guys
do
it? I think Phil's kind of setting the stage for, let's maybe talk about doing that because there could be some huge money that these guys could be playing for. Of course, it wouldn't be their money. It'd be network money, but they're kind of setting it. And then Tiger comes back, and they were asking him about his comments and about what Phil said about just the two of them. And Tiger, tongue-in-cheek as well, goes, well, let's look at the big picture. And somebody says, oh, you mean the fact that you're pretty even. When you guys play together, your records are pretty much the same. And he says, no, the big picture is, and how many tour wins does he have and how many do I have? And you could hear everybody going,
my favorite comment to come out of that whole thing, though, for that group of three was from Ricky Fowler, who said, hey, guys, I've got the best seat in the house.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, that was a great comment.
Nobody even know I'm there. You know, like Ricky could sneak in and shoot a 64. Nobody even know it.
Yeah, I mean, a former Players Champion, Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
So how many majors are in that group?
Oh, gosh.
Well,
Tiger
you guys
has 14 and 5.
14
just 14 and 5.
19 majors, and then there's Ricky.
Yeah.
Ricky's got to feel a little heat now about, okay, I got to go on a major.
However, it's something that we can talk about later, but Jordan Spieth said yesterday, you know, don't forget that Ricky's won the Players' Championship, and he actually said the Players is harder to win than a major.
It is.
So we can talk about that later.
Tiger said that too. Yeah. Tiger said that. Phil said that. It is a very difficult tournament to win because, number one, the golf course is extremely challenging. It challenges every aspect of your game. This golf, you have to have every shot plus a few in the bag to play TPC Sawgrass. And number two, it's the greatest field of any tournament every year. So the competition's stiff, the tournament is a pressure packed, and the course is difficult. So all three of those together.
The course and the cocktails are stiff, right, Frank?
Yeah, we got to quit. The Dean Martin of golf right here, folks.
Okay. By the way, I would not, and I'm talking for me, but I think even if I'm speaking for any of these tour pros, I don't want to be having a one-shot lead when you're talking about how tough that course is. When you go to 18 and you have a one-shot lead or you're trying to hang or you're trying to come back and beat somebody or you're tied, 18, you have to only look to the left and see water, don't you?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how you don't just plunk it in then or cut the heck out of it and put it into the trees.
Well,
it's
what,
so daunting.
Well, what Pete, I sat with Pete Dye, of course, you know, French Lick, our friends there, he designed the French Lick course there, the Pete Dye course, and I had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with Pete over the past few years before he's kind of in bad health, and Pete told me he designed 16, 17, and 18 at TPC Sawgrass so that on your tee shot on 16, you see the water all the way down there. And that peninsula where the green sticks out and the tree to the left forces you to the right. So you're constantly looking at the water from tee box on 16 till you putt out on 6. As you're walking up to putt out on 16, you're looking at 17 in the water there. So you see that. And then the walk path is all the way around the water hazard to the tee box on 17. So the water is constantly in your face.
Sure.
Now, what they did is they put bleachers up or stands up with a tunnel off of 17 green to walk to 18. So you go into the tunnel, and when you come out, all you see is that huge ocean to the left, 18 water hazard. And it's just, it's very daunting. And Pete Dye's always been that way about trying to get in your head. And he does it with this golf course and every player will tell you that.
Well, the perfect person to talk to about it is Steve Elkington, and we're going to have him on soon because he won by one shot in 1991.
Yeah.
His second win here in 97, he won by seven shots. So, you know, two very different tournaments for him.
Yeah.
But he'll tell you some great stories about 1991 and just how nervous he was.
Can't wait to get him on.
And on 18.
And by the way, before we take our break and we'll have Steve join us, one other fun stat about this, you know, it seems like Dustin Johnson's been number one for a long, long time, and he has. It's been about a year and a half that he's owned the number one spot and held it pretty strong for the last year and a half. But here's what could happen mathematically: four players that are behind him right now, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Rose, all mathematically could move to number one in the world if they win this weekend. So those guys playing for some bragging rights as well as a lot of money and a really nice trophy, if any of those four win, mathematically, and it'll also depend on where Dustin Johnson finishes, but they could be the number one player in the world when this weekend is over. So there's a lot going on, Frank. I mean, there's just so much excitement and drama and great golf we anticipate that it's what it's all about. That's why golf, I think, just keeps getting more and more popular. People love, there's so many good golfers now that you see it at every tournament. And a tournament like this, it really brings out the best in all these guys. Because we haven't even mentioned Henrik Stenson and Jason Day and Sergio. All playing actually in the group behind Phil and Tiger. There's some great golfers out there that we haven't even touched on that have every bit of a chance to win this as well.
Tony Finau. We just was talking to Tony. Most of the players are staying right here on property in this hotel and the villas here. So they're all around us, and we're just I love it here. I want to move back. I hate Nashville.
Well, Frank controls himself here and gets out a tissue. Diane can help him there with a Kleenex. We're going to take a break, and Steve Elkington with Secret Golf will talk to us a little bit about that, but also, as Diane mentioned, telling us about what the drama is like winning a Players' Championship. So all that and a lot more when we come back. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio, and we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you in the Dallas studios. And we have a whole host of people that are out at the Players' Championship. The TPC Sawgrass is the location. And most specifically, Sawgrass Marriott is where Frank Bassett and Diane Knox our position and have been all week. We'll be all week too, right, Frank? Are you staying through Sunday?
Yes.
For the final of the tournament?
Yeah. I'll be here all week. Sawgrass Marriott. They're juggling some rooms around for me because it's totally packed. What a great host this hotel is. And Diane's been fabulous. And the team, we've left some names out on the Secret Golf team. They have a great team. Jay does social media. Dan does all the technical side. Of course, Diane doing interviews and stuff for us.
Hello.
She's our female Todd Lewis this week, right?
I really don't know how I feel about that title, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, but the Secret Golf team has been just great. I mean, what a professional group of people.
You.
And they've had all their players here. So Diane's been doing one-on-ones here at our stage with the Secret Golfers. And what's a great interviews we'll be playing. You can go to secretgolf.com and get those. They'll be on social media, too. They'll be on this show. We're interjecting them the rest of the week. But guess who we've got on the phone right now?
Oh, guess.
Guess.
Yeah, got to guess, considering we just teased it. Yeah.
The man.
Who could it be?
The man himself, 10-time PGA Tour winner, PGA Championship winner, and 2-time Players Championship winner, Steve Elkington. Hey, buddy.
Good morning, everybody. How's my favorite piece of property out there?
Exactly.
All of your players, all the Secret Golfers are saying they have never seen this course in better shape, ever. What did Brian Harman say? He just went, wow.
I know, Andrew Landry, I said to him today, because obviously it's his first time playing Elk, and we were talking about that, and I said, Andrew, how's the course looking? He played with Duff all 18 yesterday, and he just said, wow.
Well, you know, when I first went to the Players' Championship, I said, wow, also in 1990, I think it was the first time I qualified for the event, and I walked onto the 10th tee, and I looked at the narrow chute through there with all the bunkers, and it's so visually intimidating. Pete Dye is a genius at making the player feel minuscule on the tee, and I said to myself right then that I would never be able to play good here. Just look too claustrophobic out there, and I've heard from my players that have been on your show, we've had a great representation this week of Secret Golfers, that the course indeed is playing very firm. Duff's a little worried. He texted me, he said the greens may get where they're out of control, and I wrote back, perfect. We all want to see a little train wrecks, right? Don't we?
Absolutely.
Sure.
That's why we watch roller derby and wrestling, you know? And NASCAR. This is a NASCAR event played on a golf course, basically. Everybody's looking for the crash at 17. So
there's other holes too, Frank, that lurk, and we all know that. The interesting thing about you know, what I really like about the Players' Championship as opposed to some others is it's very similar thinking-wise to Augusta. And people go, wait, what do you mean? Everybody that watches the Players' Championship on TV, and this is the similarity, is we all know kind of how to play the hole. Am I right? Like we know you have to play 16 a certain way. You know what I'm saying? There's no real shot from out of the rough here at TPC.
No, you're absolutely right. We were talking about that in the previous segment, Elk. It was, you know, Pete Dye's design of 16, 17, and 18 and how he visually just takes you to the mat from the tee box on 16 until you putt out on 18. And you, in 1991, your first Players' Championship, give us some insight into your thinking when you were coming down to the final three or four holes and you were about to win this thing.
Well, you know, I was a very young player, and I was paired with Curtis Strange on Sunday, and people don't realize this, that Tiger, you know, he wears that red shirt. But he didn't really invent the red shirt, Frank, and it was invented by Curtis Strange. He won actually, it was invented by Lee Trevino in 71 when he won at Oak Hill with a red shirt and a pair of red socks on, and his pants were 3 inches too short. He did that on purpose. But Curtis Strange won back-to-back U.S. Opens, and I was paired with him. So he won 89 and 90 in the U.S. Open. I was paired with him on Sunday. I thought, geez, man, this is going to be tough for me, man, playing with the U.S. two-time U.S. Open champ, Curtis Strange. He's mean. You know, he almost, you know, spits on you when you come to the tee. Now, I'm saying that if you're listening, Curtis, in a nicest way possible, by the way. Anyway, I was very nervous, but I was playing Super Golf, and cut a long story short, you know, I've told a lot of people this story. When I putted out at 16, I was making the walk to 17, knowing that I was coming along there. I tripped on an imaginary nothing and almost fell over because my legs were so wobbly, knowing that I had to come over to 17 and hit that shot. Now, I don't know. I know this is true. You guys won't know this, but the hole played a lot longer. People are going to say, what are you talking about, Elk? We've got yardage books. My caddy has. Well, we played that hole 140, 145, and believe it or not, Curtis Strange had the honor on that hole that day, and he hit a 7-iron, and I'm like, oh, my God. What am I going to do here? Anyway, I was a young guy, smashed an 8-iron up there and got it on the front and made my way through. And I finished up doing this incredible 3-iron shot out of a divot on 18 and made the putt to win the tournament. And it changed my whole deal.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry, Tim, but real quick. Now, Elk, when you won this thing in 91, at that time, was it not a 10-year exemption on tour?
It certainly was, yeah. You know, you could back then. You could go to the bank. I had just bought a house, and I think I won $228,000. Just built a house with my wife, and we had a $115,000 loan. Went bang the next day, Monday morning, went and paid it off, mate. And I was like the happiest person. And another $100,000 in the bank. I was feeling like I have arrived. But the 10-year exemption, I could have gone up to the banker and said, you know what? Here's what I have. This is what I own. Will you borrow money against it? He said, absolutely. It was like better than gold, mate, because you can get injured. I've told Andrew Landry and all these young guys, you can get injured on the tour. So winning is so important. You can get a little ding on something, and next thing you know, you're off the tour.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it can happen that fast. And hey, by the way, Elk, I was curious, and I don't want to bring up bad memories, but two-time winner, and you won in 91, 97. Shortest gap for a lot of the multiple winners there that existed. So you obviously like that course. But did you have any other times when you were in the hunt and things didn't go so well? Did you dunk a ball on 17 or do something on 18 when you had a chance other tournaments?
I've done some dunking, not until later, but I didn't dunk. I was one of those guys that, you know, you don't even know stats, right? I mean, Diane and Dan pulled up some stats from 97 that I won that I've never even seen before, and 91 that the tour used to keep, but we never really used to look at them. You know, we never used to look at our stats and go, okay, I need a coach to tell me that I need to. Well, I know I'm hitting it to the right. Okay, you don't have to tell me. I know that already, or whatever it is. But I was one of those crazy stats where Elk could hit, you know, 100 shots on this hole or whatever without going in the water. So I hate it when people tell you that, to be honest with you. You know, when I won in 97, I was a different player when I came back in 97. 97, I've told people, was probably my greatest four-day event. Like, I peaked out in my golfing ability that week, led the tournament from wire to wire, and I've told some other players that there's only one thing that's even more powerful than winning wire to wire, and that is shooting the low round of the day on Sunday with the lead. Now, that's an ass-kicking, any way you cut the sausage.
Any way you cut the sausage.
Hey, Elk, you've won in both seasons on this golf course, correct? In March and in May.
No, both mine were in March.
Oh, they were both March. I thought we moved it. Okay, I'm wrong then. Oh, well, yeah. I've been known to be wrong before.
That's and what do you think about the change then, Elk, when they're making the change the next year? You in favor of that? Will it make a big difference?
No doubt. It's much different course. It's going to create all kind of new problems for players. You know, 97, when I won there in 97, that was 2 weeks before Tiger Woods did the what we know as the starting point of his life, right? We went up to Augusta and he won by whatever. And I always flash people or my son and them when they start telling me about Tiger. I said, hey, in 97, he finished like tied for 54th. That was 2 weeks before he blew everyone away by 12. It's just different in March, mate. The turf's not in there very good. You get the north winds coming in. And, for example, both my wins, I hit driver 4-iron in 97 to 18. Driver, not 3-wood. And, in 91, I was probably playing with Hickory and Feathery. I hit a driver and a 3-iron. So it's going to be a different setup. You could hit 8-iron. 7-irons could be seen at 17, which is a whole new arena of disaster.
Well, you know, Johnny Miller had suggested and won last year, I believe it was. We had him on the show. And he said he would like to see them take the tee box on 18 and move it across to where they have the golf channel set. In essence, take it, if you're standing on it, and move it to the left. So you've got more of the water to play over. I'd like your thought on that, because my thought is it's more difficult where it is right now because you have the huge tree. The bailout, there's really no bailout to the right, and there's certainly no bailout to the left. What do you think about that?
It gets your attention either way, mate, whether it's a bit further left. I mean, they did that at Pebble Beach. They put the new tee further left, and it actually made more angle, and it made the shot easier because you sort of hit away from Pete told me, hit away from the water, Pete told me that the most intimidating shot of all is when you're standing with your ankles against the bulkhead and you see it in your vision the whole way. When you get offset that, it actually makes it a little easier. Now, when you stand up there on a cut day or, you know, on with the lead, it's all you want, mate. It's everything you want as far as having the full attention right now. When the rough's up on the right and you could have to chip out if you hit it in the rough, that's what they need. They need more rough over there.
Yeah. Alec, when we spoke about the course the other day, you had said, you know, with the design of this course, Pete Dye wanted you to play down the troubled line, and that's when you'll really get rewarded. We spoke to Andrew Landry this morning, and we did an Instagram Live, and somebody asked a really good question. You know, they said to Andrew Landry, would you play the course on the offensive or the defensive? So what do you think?
Well, how did he answer before I give you mine?
He said he was going for it. He said he's going to play offensive. He said he might play six holes defensive, but the majority of holes he's going on the offense.
Ooh. Well, he's right. I mean, he's right. Because I tell you what, I've also spoken to another major champion, super player, that's caddy came to me and wanted advice because he's done so poorly here. Won't mention his name today, but doesn't matter. I will when he wins it. But you know, it's great to have a plan at the players. You have to go down the trouble line, isn't it? So many of these players really and truly have no idea. I mean, they've been on the range working with their coach. They've done all this stuff. They got their swing in their mind, blah, blah, blah. But when you get out on this course, the hardest thing about the players is you have to keep hitting it into this tiny bottleneck all week on all these shots. And as the pressure mounts and as you get onto Saturday, Sunday, it's very evident who's going to win this event. It's not going to be any mystery. The guys that can get it into these corners are going to be able to open up the scoring opportunities. Landry's right. I've told him what he has to do. Now, it's great to have a plan. Can you execute it? Okay. There's plenty of years there where I crash and burn, but I still knew what to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is the difference between a lot of it is everybody's got their plan. In the old boxing sage, right? Everybody's got a plan until they get hit. And then
yep.
The plan goes to hell. So it's like, okay, you got to figure out what you have to do now because you don't always have your A game and you got to figure out how to do it in different conditions.
It's very hard to play safe at the players because there's no room.
So.
There's only one real great way to play the course. For example, you know, 18, you know, you can play safe at 18 out to the right, but now you've got the green tilted the wrong way and you've got a longer shot in and you brought the water into play. If you go for it down the left a little bit, even with your 3-wood, now you've kind of ended the hole. You're not going to hit it in the water from the fairway at 18. Adam Scott did it when he won, but hey, pretty much it takes a lot of balls to play properly at TPC. Can we say that? We did it. It doesn't matter.
We did. I think we just did. I think we just
did.
There. And that was Steve Elkington who just said that. So
yeah.
If you're just joining us, Steve Elkington. Diane Knox and Frank Bassett at the Players' Championship TPC Sawgrass. Tim Matthews here in the Dallas studios. Steve, I am curious, all the great golfers, and you could name all the best ones in the world right now that are playing, if you had to pick two or three of them that you think will be there on Sunday, who are you looking at?
Well, you have to go with guys that are hot a little bit and got a lot of ball control, right? Landry just came to mind right there. Duffner just finished second at with Perez in New Orleans. Of course, I'm going with Secret Golf guys. You know, one thing you can't do at Players, even though there's been some big hitters that have won it, like Greg Norman and Freddie Couples and Davis Love, but Davis Love won like 7 Hilton Heads. He's got a lot of discipline, right? You'd never think Davis Love would win 6 or 7 Hilton Heads and 2 Players because he's one of the longest hitters out there. It takes a lot of discipline, a lot of ball control. So I'm sticking with the guys in my group. I think Ryan Palmer's going to have a good week. Jason Kokrak has said he's putting well. That's important for him. He's so long, he can make these holes a lot shorter with the iron off the tee and so forth. You can't smash it up there. As soon as you get these guys like Spieth, who hasn't played well here, or whomever, Phil's won here once, I think, but normally he tries to smash it up there, and next thing you know, he puts a big number up on the board. So it takes a lot of discipline.
Elk, when we spoke about the players a couple of weeks ago, you had said that when you played here, you adopted a slightly different putting technique. And yesterday, Russell, my bro, came over for a wee chat, and his putting has been the thing that has let him down a little bit over the past year and a bit. And he said that he's changed his putting up a little bit for this week. And he said, well, we'll see how it goes on Thursday. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's what elk did. That could be a very good omen.
It certainly could be. I was an average putter at times, but I putted my brains out at Players' Championship. The greens are actually quite flat once you get on them, and to me, they were really easy to read. It was just a matter of, executing. But I hear the greens are firm and fast. What that tells me is when the greens are firm and fast, that tells me there's going to be balls that hit on the green and roll off to the edge, so there's going to be a lot of little shots up, and there'll be a little sort of cleanup around the hole, 3 to 5 footers, for pars to keep your momentum going, etc. Anyone that's missing the fairways, no chance. If the greens are firm, no chance. Can't play any from out of the rough with firm greens. So you're going to have all parts of your game on point. You're going to have to drive it the best you've ever driven it. You're going to have to hit your irons with the most spin and the most trajectory to hold them on the firm greens. And you're going to have to putt to. You're not going to be able to smash it up there, wedge it on, and just walk around and do like some of the events we've seen.
Elk, if you were paying money, if you're a regular fan of golf like you are, but who would you want to see of all the groups that are going out there? And there's some very, very prestigious groups of guys. We were talking earlier before you joined us about Phil and Tiger kidding with each other about just cancel everybody else and the two of us will just go head-to-head. Almost like that's what everybody wants to see. What groups, who would you want to go watch, regardless of how they're playing?
I love the two, the biggest nerds are now the biggest comedians out there, and all the media just laughs. They slap their knee and rub their belly. These guys are so funny. Oh, my God. they couldn't, anyway. Of course, always Phil has a hint of gamblingism in every quote there is, right?
Yeah.
The tour just like cringes when they made us do an online course, so that we had to be aware of gambling. And if you walked off, a question on the test was like, okay, Elk, if you question and answer, if you walked off the course and someone approached you, a shady character like Frank looking came up to you and said,
thanks.
Sorry, mate.
It's okay.
You just saw that Phil Mickelson, you were playing with it, tweaked his shoulder, and you say, hey, do you think Phil's going to play tomorrow? How do you think his chances are tomorrow? Is it A, would you walk by? B, accept his bribe? C, don't know. And I wrote back, well, how much was the bribe?
I need more information.
I need more information.
That made him happy.
Anyway, so the tour must cringe. But to go back to your question, Tim, I like all those guys. I would probably, if I was paying money to go down there and see it, I'd like to see how the guys drive it up 14. If you walked over to the 14th hole, it's the narrowest. Remember that time you hit that snap hook in the water and then took that drop like 200 yards ahead of where he should have and all that, no one had the balls to tell him it was way back here. If you get up there and you get a little left to right wind, which is true, by the way, you get a little left to right breeze, and if you walk up there and watch maybe 4 or 5 groups from the back of 14T, you're going to find out if they can drive it, because it's nasty back there. It's down across, visually crazy sort of diagonal angles and T-ball suicide looking. That's a good one. 17, of course, we know all about 17. Mate, it's a chip shot for these guys. It's a wedge, and they're still all choking, but that's okay. I want to see the precision, mate. I'd go over to number 4 and with the pin down front left, watch those guys spin it in there if they're playing well. And, of course, what would make it all the best would be if it was real windy. That's when you really know if you can play.
Oh. Yeah. I've lived here 14 years. And played this course. My home club is Sawgrass. I played this course over across the street here a lot. And you're right. When the wind's blowing, this course for amateurs, well, they have tee boxes for the amateurs. You can move forward. But I thought in the day I was, I was pretty good. I was in single-digit handicap. This course still ate my lunch. Just chewed me up and spit me out.
Yeah, I mean, if I was caddying for you and I sort of was with you and I could shut down that oversensory, where you're like, don't go here, Frank, or don't go, all that thing inside of your head, you could probably do better. And that's what this course is a little bit about, which is, it's very intimidating. It's intimidating watching on TV when you see the 17th hole. By the way, that green is like half the size as you think it is when you walk over. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, Johnny Miller also said he suggested they raise the tee box on 17 higher so you would see the water behind it also to add to the intimidation factor.
Well, Johnny's just—let's face it—he's just an evil person. I mean,
he is evil.
He's not gonna—he's never gonna stand on that tee again, right? So, I'd like to see it go back to about 150. That'd be all right. I'd like to see that move. And do you know, if you look back through the annuals of all the winners that played 17, which what amazed me when I think of 17, I remember Mark McCumber and Cal Pete, Hal Sutton, Greg Norman, every one of them on Sunday hit it like a foot from the hole with like an 8-iron. I'm like, how in the world did they have the balls to aim it over there? I have no idea. Because when you get on that green, you know, the hardest shot for me in my life was standing up there with a 6-shot lead. Because, you know, you're a little bit delirious at this point that you're going to win $600,000-$700,000 in 10 years. And, mate, they were already putting the trash people were there. They'd already given the tournament to Elkington. And some drunk guy comes over to Gypsy on 16. He goes, hey, I need you to choke a little bit. I've got bets over here. And Gypsy went over there and said, hey, man, I see you're pretty excited. He says, I'm pretty excited, too. He said, how about we get up here at the last hole and we'll have a little match to see who's the most excited out of me and you. So there was a lot going on. But, you know, I had to just hit a shot, you know, to the left side of that green, which I did. It was just one of those weeks, mate, where when I looked up from the shot, it was going in exactly the window that I wanted it to be. And I just had a nice control over the ball. It was great.
And chipped it in. Chipped it in straight in.
Chipped
the
it in, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that was just for, you know, that was showing off.
Sure, the icing on
the cake.
Showing
off.
Johnny Miller, I think, said, oh, he's not taking very much time. Well, Johnny, mate, I've got a 7-shot lead. I mean, I could hit it out here with my Swanson. I'm still going to win. The beer is cooling down in the locker room, mate. It's time for me to get out of here. And it just went up and went in. Big deal. Okay, thanks very much.
Oh my goodness. We're joined by Steve Elkington, the two-time Players' Championship, or the Players' Winner, 10-time Tour winner. And your stories, Elk, are incredible. I could listen to you all day tell these stories.
Well, you know, I have a long history like you, Frank, of being out and around, and we had to entertain ourselves back in the day, you know, when we didn't have all the cell phones and everything. Players' Championship's got a great, great community of characters down there. When I think of Buster, Dr. Buster in the locker room that used to give us a shot when we had allergies or whatever. Yeah. And I always tell my players when they get a little mouthy, I said, well, I tell you what, how mouthy you are. I said, you meet me in the past champions locker room, we'll discuss this. That's what I tell them, you know. Because the people that don't know, we have
in.
A past champions locker room.
And you have a gate named for you here also.
Yeah, that's when you know you're at the top right there, the gate.
The gate is it.
Yeah. That's a gate.
I strive to get a gate named after me.
Well, buddy, I wish you were here with us. We're having a blast. We'd have a lot more fun if you were here, for sure.
There's no doubt about it. I'm pretty busy, but I tell you what, you know, Secret Golf certainly showed up. I know Golf Talk America is the place to be for listening to tour players talk this week. I think I'm looking at my phone, Frank, and Tim, what do we got, a dozen or so, or 10 or 15?
Yeah.
Tons of tour players. I mean, XM's got to be, they got to be squeezing, they got to be, their heads got to be loaded over there.
I love it. PGATour.com/podcast, baby, the place to
be. There you go.
Golf
there you go.
Right.
All right. Well, Elk, thanks so much for your time. We do appreciate it and all your stories. And it's always entertaining. It's always fun. I had no idea you were a testicular surgeon, apparently, that you are. But that came into focus.
Whatever. Thanks very much. Diane, keep up the good work. I'm loving the stuff.
Oh, good.
Frank,
thank you.
Jim, keep it
all
up.
All right.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you,
appreciate it.
Take care.
See ya.
Bye.
Steve Elkington.
Wow.
Diane, he has a way with the words. Almost like a Scottish poet.
That's my boss. I talk to him every single day. I get that.
Golf Talk America will be moving to a simulcast on the Trinity Broadcasting Network.
He's so funny, though. He's so funny. He just tells it like it is.
Yeah,
you know?
he's not filter.
He's telling the truth.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people that are in the professional athlete domain, they can be a little bit muted and they try to be a bit overcautious. Not Elk. He just tells you exactly what's going through his mind. And I like that.
I love it.
And quite honestly, a lot of professional athletes don't take criticism very well, even if it's honest. If somebody does something, you're like, hey, you missed the game-winning shot at the end of the game, and you ask them about it, they get real testy, and you're like, I'm sorry, was it not a fact that you just missed that shot?
Yeah.
They don't like to know that they missed a putt or they did something. So, yeah, Elk's refreshing because he's like, hey, here's what it is. I choke, everybody chokes, everybody hits bad shots. And that's
Elk
what
was alluding to, in the old days here, the Island Club, which was a level of right below the patron, where they up on the hill behind the clubhouse, the old clubhouse, is where the Island Club was. And they used to have a band playing there, and it was the biggest party in all of golf. I mean, it really was, in those days, as big as you see in Phoenix. It was a crazy party, and the players would always complain because they'd be coming in on number 9 or teeing off on number 1, and they were like, what in the world is going on up there? I mean, it was just a throwdown party, and the parties lasted until midnight and beyond here.
What?
They kept the course open. The band played. It was great.
I mean, people do say that it's getting more of a party atmosphere here on 17, and it is loud. But when Jason Kokrak was over the other day, I asked him about that, and he said it's nothing compared to the 16th at the Phoenix. Like, there's just nothing like that. So people will start making comparisons, and he's like, nah, that place, it's just deafening how loud it is.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a fun atmosphere here. It's a great tournament to come along and watch.
It is.
And I think, Frank, it's just like we're talking about with Phoenix. We talk about that. I don't think those tournaments, this one and Phoenix, and they're a few others, but I don't think those should be the exception. My feeling is, if you want to enhance your appeal to the public in general, which is the majority of people that are going to be watching golf, paying for golf, buying the tickets and the hot dogs and everything else and watching on TV, it's the hackers, it's the us guys that are out there. But if you're on site, you've got to entertain people. They've got to have fun with it. And the days, and I'm sorry, but the days of, you know, Ben Hogan and everybody's got to be quiet and you can't, I just don't think you're going to go the way of NASCAR. If you've noticed, NASCAR is really diminishing. The France family is talking about selling NASCAR because they've lost so much popularity, and they were hugely popular 10 and 15 years ago.
Oh, forever. Yeah. They had characters.
You got to be careful about how you treat the fan, because they can turn, and if they turn and find something else to do, like the millennials will do in a heartbeat today, you can find yourself in tough spots. So I think it's great that Sawgrass and other places entertain people and have a great time.
And look at the music that they had at the Zurich a few weeks ago. They had the walkout music.
Yeah, the walkout music,
I think it was a great idea. I don't know if it was executed
as well.
They maybe missed a trick with it, because there's a lot of guys that you didn't see or hear their songs on if you weren't at the tournament. But I agree with you completely. It's definitely steps forward to make it more entertaining for the spectator.
Diane Knox, you're walking on the first tee. What's your walkout music?
Well, I think that I would like to have something Scottish. And I had this conversation with
Mama Mia.
I would like to have the Proclaimers' 500 Miles. Or there's a great Scottish song called Caledonia. Russell picked the Scottish national anthem. Flower of Scotland, which was bagpipey.
Well, you know what I would pick? My pick was a Tower of Power song that was great. It's they opened their concerts with We Came to Play.
Okay.
That's a great tune. I was playing that this morning.
We heard that earlier. That was your walkout music this
That was my
morning
walkout music
here.
This morning, yeah.
Frank has his own walkout music.
I carry my own walkout music everywhere I go.
That's my job, Tim. I just have to walk ahead of Frank with music playing wherever he goes.
With a jam box on your shoulder.
The Herald Trumpeters.
Frank's
music. That's why you're glad you're not here.
I think I'd go with Danny Boy, Frank.
Danny Boy?
No, I wouldn't. But I would think of something that would... Oh, Danny Boy. You know what?
The pipes are calling.
Yeah, you got to think of what's going to motivate you, right? And so for somebody, it might be AC/DC. For someone else, it could be jazz or something, a Tower of Power. So, but I like the idea of what they did. You know what I'm saying? This is an individual, and here's what you can get a little taste of what these guys like, because it is a difference when it comes to music. There's all kinds of different music that people like. You'd be like, I had no idea that Rory McIlroy likes Celine Dion.
You threw him under the bus.
Wow.
Under the bus.
Cher. But then he went to the Cher concert just to see the dresses.
No, but I agree with you, because you do get to see just a slightly different side to these guys. I was going online looking for all of their songs because I wanted to see what they would pick.
Fan interaction. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have the, I don't know what you want to call it, the honor, whatever. We're fortunate to be asked to Jordan Spieth's Family Foundation event every year in Dallas, his charity event. And Tim and I go every year, and we do interviews and talk to people, and I have all sorts of fun stuff. But on 17, tell Diane what was going on 17 this year at Jordan's
17,
event.
They bring out a guy who's not, he's more hip-hop than rap, but he basically write songs in his head, depending on who's coming up to play. And that doesn't mean it was some pros, so there'd be Ryan Palmer or Jordan Spieth, and he'd have a funny rhyme, but like a rapping rhyme that he would say to these guys as he came up. But then he'd also find out about Frank Bassett or the CEO of this company, somebody else who's playing in the Pro-Am, and he'd make up something about that guy and his old girlfriend. And people were loving it. It was funny. It was entertaining. It was Peyton Manning's got a brother.
Cooper?
Yeah, that Cooper Manning. His name is Cooper. And Cooper got up there, and guys would then put money down, Diane. Oh. So, like, if you'd hit your own ball, and he'd made fun of Cooper because he was Peyton and Eli's brother that nobody knew, right? So that was his rhyme going on and on about that. So everybody made fun of that, and he had fun. But then a guy goes, for $500, I want Cooper to hit another one. So all towards the charity, they put another $500. The guy would make up another one and rip on Cooper. He was like shredded. Oh, he was shredded up there for about 10 minutes. Boy, he couldn't get away.
I felt sorry for him. It was brutal. Yeah. And some of the other players that had finished ahead were putting money up to rag people. So
He had a band with him. He had like three or four musicians with him. People say that he's done it. It's the first time I've ever seen the guy, but they say he's pretty popular around the country doing these, especially for those kind of things. Like Ricky has a tournament here and Justin over there, and they bring this guy in to do it. He's probably making a great living now doing just those things, but he's got that skill that he can find out something about how you're playing that day, and within 30 seconds he turns it into a lyric.
A rap song, It was great. It was fun. We'll do it again this year. And, you know, this week, of course, you know, we're talking Players Championship. Next week you'll be live from the Byron Nelson, correct?
Byron Nelson will be at the new location starting next week, and followed right after that by the soon-to-be Charles Schwartz Colonial.
But, Charles Schwartz?
Charles Schwab. Yeah.
Were you out with Frank last night? Damn.
Charles Schwab Colonial. But right now it's a Fort Worth Invitational because they're between sponsors. And but yeah, it'll be back-to-back weeks there with the Byron Nelson and Colonial.
Well, I wish you were here with us too, buddy. It's this is I'd take you around town and show you some of the haunts and fun places and places on the Intercoastal. We'll take the boat and pull up at Ty Votaw's boat dock and on the Intercoastal and mess with him and have some fun. I love this place. I just love this place. It's magical. When I crossed, I was driving down, of course, and I had an incident in Atlanta that was well documented on Twitter with my car and a blowout at 70 miles an hour in the middle of Atlanta downtown traffic. It was a thrill, and it was stressful. But the second I crossed over the Florida state line into Florida, my whole demeanor changed. It just like, I'm home, you know, I'm home. You know, no valley of death like the Indians call Nashville, because it's such an allergy-ridden area. It's in a bowl, and all the pollen settles.
I've never been to Nashville. I keep saying, I need you to stay there so I can come and visit. Well, come on. Then you can move back to Jacksonville.
I tell you what, you go to Jacksonville, I'll stay at your house. You can go up there and stay at my house.
I have a one-bedroom apartment that's probably smaller than your closet in Nashville, so I don't know how you would cope.
It doesn't bother. I'm never in the house. I'm on the beach.
That's
or
the price
golf course.
You pay for living at the beach. Yeah.
Hey, Carl Paulson, by the way, Tim, walked by a minute ago and said hi to us. Yeah. He said that they played Tim Aquana Country Club, which is a fabulous club likened to Belle Meade Country Club in Nashville, and Dallas, I guess, Country Club. He said they had some adult beverages on the course yesterday, he and some of the boys. And he said he was cross-eyed on 18 when he putted out, okay? And he still shot, was it 3-under or 6-under? 6-under. He shot 6-under par yesterday. Carl Paulson. Well, yeah.
Yeah, because he had swing lube.
So he had a lot of – he had Art Selinger swing lube, okay?
You got to get that slow drip going, you know? you're self-medicating, and you know exactly how to do it. You can shoot a pretty good score.
Hey, for everybody listening, go out to secretgolf.com and check it out. It's great instructional stuff. Join it. It's an incredible value to join the Secret Golf Group. And you'll get to hear from Elk and people like Jackie Burke and Patton Kizzire and Sandra Gall and Jarena Piller and Russell Knox.
Yeah, we've
Diane
got a
Knox.
Fair
Diane
bunch. Knox. Fair bunch of the
They're all there.
By the way, so funny, real quick before we go. Monday, or Tuesday was it? I can't remember. I ran over to the media center. Then I walked out. Sweeney was with me and Pam was with me. So we walked out and I walked up the hill where you come off of 18 and you walk up over a hill and back down. So I'm walking up the hill and I look up and, of course, there's Cole Pepper. Cole was formerly married to one of my godchildren here in Jacksonville, and he's interviewing Russell Knox. for WJXT television,
who?
The sports director.
Who?
Who? Anyway, so I walked up, talked to Russell a little bit, and yeah, Russell's a good dude. Ran into Russell Knox's father. He came over to the set yesterday to say hi, and Diane's dad. And do you know that Diane's mother has been volunteering for this tournament for how many years?
This is her 11th year.
11th year she works the driving range.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Her. She's actually finishing up today, and she's going to come over and see us.
She's going to come on the show.
Yep, she's going to come. Because it's Mother's Day on Sunday, and the last time this tournament's going to be held on Mother's Day, the final round. So she's going to come over. And when we've had all of our players here this week, we've been asking them about their mums. And, you know, if they've got kids, their wives, what they're going to do for Mother's Day. And some of this stuff has been lovely. Really, really nice. So we'll maybe put all that together and give a shout out to all the mums, or the moms,
Moms. But and in closing, I don't want to leave today's show without, because we've had a lot of fun, talked a little bit about gambling and money and what you make and all that. But the PGA Tour donates more money to charity annually than the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball all put together. The PGA Tour, over $2 billion in donations already. And it's just, every tournament is a charitable event. And
that's what I think is great about golf, is that it's outdoors. It's usually in a beautiful setting. They do great things for the community. They have fun. And the fans that come and have an entertaining time, you can't beat it. I mean, you really can't beat it, I don't think. And it's a safe environment. You very seldom ever hear about hooligans out in the parking lot.
No.
Getting into it like you do at other sporting events.
Boy.
You know, you got to run to your car. So, yeah, we all love golf. All right, let's leave it on that. Golf
that's
is the greatest game in the world.
Let's leave on a high note.
The
high note. There you go.
Hey, we had a great time today. Thanks, everybody. And we'll be back with you. Don't forget, Frank and Diane will be there at Sawgrass for the next 6 years. So, shows daily, 2 shows on Saturday. Having a great time. But thanks to Diane and Frank Bassett, also Steve Elkington, for joining us today. For all of them, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us, and join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.